Blog Talk Radio.
See, I told you, you can't get away without a Tuesday without me. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the F-World Headquarters podcast. I am your host with the most. Here to welcome you to the F-World Headquarters, the original F-World himself, the icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. I hope you guys are all doing well. Hope you guys had a great weekend. You know, I really feel a little bit regretful that I didn't have a show yesterday. I thought, you know, I'd like to do a show and have Motivation Monday and kind of give some people something to kind of go on and something to kind of inspire people for the rest of the week. But then I said, you know, I'm already on here Tuesday and probably Friday and who knows when else, and I don't want to burn you guys out. But, you know, as I said on Instagram just before I came on here, is that, you know, in 2022, I was told by Spotify that my show has generated 99% more original new content than any other show in my category. And I'm sure that a lot of people would probably take that as success in itself. But I see it as, you know, that just tells me I need to work harder, because if I'm not 100% more original than everyone else, I'm not 100% giving you guys 100% more new and original stuff, then I'm not giving you guys the best show possible. So that's why 2023 is going to be an epic year, and we're going to make sure of it. You guys ever get hiccups? And I did advertise this could be a random show. And I don't know if anyone has ever given this kind of a tip before, but for those people who have ever suffered hiccups, I know there's many ways and what they call old wives' tales or old home remedies, right? I don't know. Many people have different ways to get rid of things like hiccups and various other things. But I know for me, for example, I find breathing in really quick, like a quick breath through your mouth, like a mouth breath in your lungs, generally will stop the hiccups pretty quick. I know a lot of people suggest like scaring someone or other things like that. But that's something that's always worked for me, is just taking in a deep breath through your mouth and into your lungs, and that usually stops the hiccups for the most part. Because I'm telling you, there's nothing more obnoxious than hiccups here and there. They just pop up out of nowhere. And you probably don't know this, but I did have hiccups, and as you can hear, they're no longer here. Because I did that trick that I just talked about. So there you have it. It does work. Proof on air. So today's show is random, in every sense of the word. You know, Talking Tuesday, I want to first, you know, talk a little bit about why on Tuesday we call it Talking Tuesday. Really, this is a throwback to my, you know, the wrestling days and also the early days of me discovering social media, I guess you'd say. You see, I don't know if a lot of people can relate to this, but, you know, being someone who was always on the road wrestling while working in the filmmaking, whatever I'm doing, picks up a lot of my time. And because it was taking up so much of my time, I would get emails or messages from people on social media. And because of how I was always taught by the great, late, great Killer Kowalski to always respond to all your fans. Your fans are the ones who help you at the end of the day. Your fans are the ones who put the food on your table. And the fans are the ones who ultimately decide and make and break you. So I made it a point to always take care of my fans and also to respond to every single message I get. This is ridiculous. Like, to an extent, it's a little ridiculous sometimes. I'll be the first to admit. My family, it drives them nuts. Even my wife and my kids, it drives them nuts. See, it doesn't go just beyond like sending someone a message. It's, let's say someone sends me a text message. It's modern era. If I don't see it right away, I automatically respond to it no matter, you know, whenever I get that message. Whether the phone is late giving me the message, or maybe sometimes I'm busy or whatever, maybe I'm driving, to pick up someone, but the minute they get in, you know, the minute I can stop and look at phone, I'll respond to the text message regardless if the person who sent me the message is in the car with me or not. Yeah, that's a real thing, folks. Or let's say for the sake of argument, we always get, you know, text messages and messages all the time, but you know, I would sit there at dinner time, not dinner time, but like we'll be sitting in the living room or whatever, and I might see a message I might have missed from my daughter 3 days ago because I get 700 other emails from between her, my son, my wife, and other people in between that. And if I miss that one message, I still have to respond to that one message. Even if we've talked several times since then, I feel the need I need to respond to that message. And she'll be sitting maybe across the room from me. I'll still respond to the message. So usually the accompanying sounds coming from her is really dead. That was 3 or 4 days ago. Anyway, that's just my dedication to people. When I see a message from someone, I always feel bad if I can't get back to them right away. But also, when it came to social media, I'm talking about like Facebook, really is really what started. And actually was also Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg who coined the phrase and also gave me the credit for coining the phrase of Talking Tuesday. You see, because I was friends with so many people from all over the place, between my own family and friends and people I went to school with and whatnot, you know, and I would always get emails. So, I mean, let's face it, whenever we're on social media, we usually interact with the same people over and over again for the most part, right? People we strike up a relationship with or friendships with or business partnership, whatever. For the most part, we talk to the same people all the time. But there are a lot of people on your friends list. Look at your friends list right now, in fact. No matter whatever genre you're on, whatever your platform, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, I guarantee you, there are people who follow you or you follow you have never talked to or you've never even sent a message to, or nor have they probably sent one to you. Sometimes that could be out of nerves, and sometimes it can be just out of busyness, right? As I mentioned, sometimes when you get stuck in the same kind of a pattern, you talk to the same people all the time, and you got to respond to all of those first. At one point on social media, I was, dealing with all the wrestling stuff I was doing, also making a film. So I was addressing people in the cast and crew and organizing film shoots and everything else. So it took up a lot of time. But what I did is I set aside a certain amount of time on one day that was kind of quiet from the rest of the days. And that would be the day I would respond to, you know, messages from fans or talk to people I normally wouldn't get to talk to. Because ultimately, if I didn't really like someone or if I didn't really support someone or if I didn't have interactions with them, I wouldn't have added them or suggested them or, you know, requested them, whatever the case may be. So I take it a point, I decided that that day was going to be Tuesday, and that on Tuesdays, I would randomly message the people I normally wouldn't get to talk to normally because of my time. And I would do that for, you know, a certain amount of window, usually about 3 hours on a Tuesday. And we coined that phrase Talking Tuesday, a day that I could talk to the people I normally wouldn't get to talk to on a regular basis. Let me tell you, out of that, I've met some of the most amazing people out there, and some of them are very close friends of mine to this day because of Talking Tuesday. In fact, fun fact, my wife was one of the people before we were, you know, we finally decided to kind of tie the knot and make it official. We were people who would talk on Talking Tuesday. One of the first people I would interact with is my wife and a couple other people on a regular basis, Talking Tuesday. But on the flip side of that, even back then, I knew that not everyone understood this concept. And I think some people might even misunderstand it or even think maybe, well, it can't be that crazy. How wild could it get? Well, let me tell you. People often ask, what do you get questioned a lot? Like when people ask you, when fans send you a question, what does it usually pertain? Well, I get questions all about all kinds of things. I've talked to people about things, and I'm very open, and I'm honest, and I have open-minded. I tell people how it is. I give them my 2 cents. I'm honest. in delivery, and I try to be I'm always respectful in whatever it is I'm going to respond with, whether I agree with them or not on a situation. And people have, you know, on many occasions come to me with, you know, various different issues or conflicts that they want some resolution to. They want an objective ear, someone to run something by. So these are things I'm used to. So one time I was at my younger brother's house, and he was with his, then it was married to his ex-wife. But we were up there because it was Tuesday, and I have I had a reputation. I like to stick to that because I think it's important for people to know that whenever you have something like that, it's important to stick to that, because you don't know, by not having something that people look forward to, or not by disrupting people, sometimes people kind of build their lives around these things, believe it or not. Or sometimes, you know, these are things that this is part of people's schedules. So it would be rude and disrespectful of me not to honor those commitments. When I set that time aside, it really is for them and whatnot. So I was at my brother's house on vacation, and even though it was vacation, I still, you know, if I get messages, I always respond. Talking Tuesday happened to be there, so I was doing Talking Tuesday. Now, my sister-in-law, obviously she didn't go into detail, and I didn't go into great things, because I always keep everything confidential with people, because sometimes people have really some serious issues they want to talk about, and I keep those to myself. But for the most part, people would ask me, advice on various different things, and from all kinds of things, from relationship stuff to bullying stuff to dealing with various things, to try to come up with who they are as people, come to terms with their, how do they address if they feel that they're a certain way, what if they're into guys or girls, and, all of those things. I really, take that time to really talk to them, give them that time to vent how they feel, and I give them my two cents. So my sister-in-law would often see, she pointed out one time I had nine conversation bars on a typical Talking Tuesday. Now, let's take Facebook, for example. That's the best example, because I think that's what it was on. So Facebook, how you have the DMs, right? Because that's kind of how all of this worked, was all done by DM. So everyone would message me, and then I'd have 7, 8, 9. I think the most I had was 14 conversations at once with 14 different people about 14 completely different subjects. So my sister-in-law dubbed me Dr. Vengeance at the time, because my wrestling name is Jazz Vengeance at the time. The good guy, Jazz Vengeance, the hero of the people. So that's why my sister-in-law called me Dr. Vengeance, or Dr. Jazz and whatnot, and on YouTube or whatever. And it's kind of fun, right? It's kind of who I am. It's kind of partly what I do. It's kind of something I'm known for, is being able to adapt and talk about various conversations and whatnot. So needless to say, that's kind of how Tuesdays became a day that I knew that was going to be a time when, if I ever do something like this, it would have to be an episode on Tuesday. And the only necessary name I could give it is Talking Tuesday. Because it was always used in conversations leading up to Tuesday or whatever. And I would even say, what's coming, today is such and such. And because it got the hashtag Talking Tuesday, this got the attention of Facebook and, of course, Mark Zuckerberg, who also dubbed me as the kind of the person who started the trend of Talking Tuesday. And it was a very interesting thing. And now, for the record, I no longer am on Facebook like that anymore. I do use Messenger still. If there's a message out there, I'll usually respond to it. But for the most part, it's all done on Instagram for the most part, or YouTube, or sometimes I'm going to be telling you guys, this TikTok thing is, I just don't get it. I don't understand the platform. I don't get what the point of it is. I mean, I mean, I get people want to make videos, make them funny, or, you know, do various different things. Maybe they want to inspire other people. I just don't understand why, like, people want to play games with other people and then have people watch them play games with the other people. I don't get why that's entertaining to somebody. That's just me. Again, it's just my purte. Maybe other people like that stuff, and hey, it's cool. But speaking of TikTok, one of the first things I really want to do, you know, tonight I got a live request to watch one from my good friend Derek, who is Batical Datical, for those people who don't know, and I just did a show for him on, I actually just talked about him and his son on Sunday, if you remember, and I called, I said that Derek is really a hero with no cape. Because of what he brings to the table and what he, you know, really represents as far as being someone who's an advocate for adoption. And Connor is also a beacon of hope for all those kids out there who hope that someday they'll have a forever home with love and caring around them. So really they're inspirations and they're heroes in themselves. Unfortunately, I found out tonight that apparently they're having a really rough time with some health issues, and the family's having a rough time. So I want to first and foremost want to give our thoughts and prayers to Derek and Bad Dad, the Baticals, so to speak, you know, to Connor and to Derek. This is a rough time right now. They're going through a lot of stuff. I'm not going to go and air their dirty laundry out there, but they got some serious issues going on with some of their family members, and my heart goes out to them. I've been there and I've done that, and you know, I'm sure Derek is a very busy guy, so I understand when Derek may not hear this, but you know, if he ever needs to chat with anyone, you know, I'm only a message away. I don't get the TikTok thing. I'm sorry, brother, but you know, there's several hundred other platforms you can reach me. You know, even email me and I'd be happy to talk to you. Cause sometimes when we have a hard time, and I can tell you this as a guy, you know, I think the norm is, right? I think a lot of the times people have this, especially for guys, they have a hard time admitting when they need to talk to somebody, or they don't know how to ask for help, or they don't want to ask for help. Cause I think it's male nature, it's guy nature to kind of want to do everything ourselves. We don't want to ask for help because we don't want people to think that we're weak. And, you know, for me, the way I look at it is, hey, everyone needs someone, everyone needs something. And I think it takes a strong person to ask and reach out for help when they need it. So anyone out there who's having a hard time, you ever need if you ever need an ear, someone to vent to, listen, you know how to get a hold of me. I'm not hard to find. Reach out and I'll be happy to listen to you. I'll be happy to talk you down and get you through these hard times together. Because, you know, life is not easy and life is not always fair. But the one thing life doesn't count on is the amazing people that will come in and out of it. Some are good and some are bad. Some are just fleeting. Some of them are just kind of like a shooting star. They come in and they're going out really quick. But for me, I'm never far away. If anyone ever needs anyone, anything, they know they only need to reach out. I can't emphasize that enough. And, you know, everyone needs someone to talk to. And I am an open book when it comes to things. And I think sometimes it helps to get things off your chest. Someone objective, someone who doesn't know you exactly, someone who's not going to blurt it out all over the place. I mean, it might be my background in pro wrestling or in film or just in human services or maybe just the way I grew up. But I always can tell when someone is having a hard time. And I go out of my way to make sure they're not having a bad time. I'll go out of my way to make sure they're, you know, try to cheer them up or try to help them find a positive resolution. So, guys, if you can go check out Batical Datical, see if you can, you know, want to cheer him up and send him well wishes his way. He and his family could use it right now. And, again, my heart goes out to you guys. You guys need a thing. You know where to find me. Anywho, changing gears here. So we said this is going to be random. So this is going to be random. So here's a question, right? On this show, I talk a lot about, you know, family, and I talk about memories, and I talk about, you know, various different things. I want to ask people their opinions on something and how I look at things. And do other people do this as well? See, a long time ago, now granted, I got to say, a lot of people took advantage of me this way, but I'm not, you know, I'm talking about my immediate family. I'm talking about your wife and your kids. Let's say that. Talking about your immediate family, those who are really close to you. When it comes to birthdays, how do you guys celebrate those birthdays? How does people celebrate when other people have birthdays or celebrations or whatnot? Do you guys give them gifts, or do you feel it? Do you go on trips? Do you give memories? Because I'm going to tell you how way I look at things, right? It may be completely different, and I get that, right? So here's how I deal with it, right? When it comes to Facebook, when it comes to, like, birthdays, especially for my wife and my kids, when my brothers and my brothers are the best example for this. So my brothers are about a month apart from each other, you know, a year in between, right? So they're a month apart from each other in the summer. So a long time ago, you know, when we were kind of a little closer back then, because, I mean, then we were all in the same area and things like that. But, of course, you know, things change over time with families or whatever. So, again, people grow apart. But for me personally, I always find going places and doing something collectively as a family is more memorable than just giving them a gift or a trinket or whatever. The reason being is, you give them a gift, like a physical gift. It can be lost. It can get broken. It can get damaged. You know, they move and they might lose it along the way. Things happen, right? You don't mean to, but even if it's a very special gift, right? Things can happen. But when you go to something together collectively as a family, right? When you go, say, to whatever, right? When you go to, you know, for example, I take people to concerts a lot. Concerts are fun. They're memorable. They're music. It's a rock concert or a music concert of some kind. And guess what? I come to find, you remember those things. You remember those times you had with other people quicker than you'll remember when someone gave you a hat or a blouse or a toy of some kind, right? I want you to put this in perspective. What do you think you'll cherish more? The fact, let's say you got to see Aerosmith in concert, if you're an Aerosmith fan. Granted, not everyone is, to each their own. Let's say you're an Aerosmith fan and someone brings you an Aerosmith show. What do you think will have more meaning for you? The fact that you got to see Aerosmith live in front of you and rocked out all night with Aerosmith at a concert, or say an Aerosmith t-shirt. I mean, you go to a concert, kind of you can do two for one, really. You can get the concert, the shirt at the concert. And if you're like me, or anybody who's ever been to a show with those concerts, and you get those shirts, I'm going to tell you, eventually down the road, they're going to get faded, they're going to get lost. But the memory of being there around the people that you love, the memory you are there with, that can never be changed. As a parent, as a father, and as a husband, one of my proudest family outings, really, was I took everyone to our first family concert. It was on my wife and I's anniversary when we met. I know we sound juvenile and stuff like that. We celebrate the anniversary when we met. We also celebrate our anniversary, our wedding anniversary. We also celebrate the anniversary when we got engaged to finalize the journey was over. We were meant to be. Well, we were celebrating the anniversary of us meeting. And of course, our kids are a lot older now. You know, because again, sometimes in life you got to go around the world to find out the one person you're supposed to be with the rest of your life was in front of you the whole time. That's kind of the ongoing story for my family. Well, the kids are older. My wife is older. Well, my wife is, you know, whatever. And I say, we're going to go see Def Leppard, because Def Leppard I've seen many, many times. See, the other thing is you really got to know who you're bringing to these things, right? For example, my son does not like pyrotechnics at all. My daughter doesn't mind them. She does. She can deal with some pyrotechnics. My wife's not overly fond of them either, though, for the record. So, you know, taking that account, you know, I've seen Def Leppard many times. I've never seen them use pyrotechnics. They don't need it. But it was Def Leppard, REO Speedwagon, and Tesla was their first concert as a family. And for those rock, classic rock fans, you guys are probably like, oh, what an awesome show. And it was an awesome show. And a lot of you guys are like, well, wait a minute. How old are you getting? For the record, my son was, when at that time, he was probably 12. My daughter was a year older than him, so 13. So we brought our 12 and 13-year-old to their first rock concert. It was Def Leppard, REO Speedwagon, and Tesla. And you know what? The family as a whole likes Def Leppard. The kids like that kind of music because they're around my wife and I, who also enjoy those movies, those bands. Because I'll tell you, music can be subjective. Music is kind of all over the place. Sometimes you have kids who listen to their parents' music and they love it, and sometimes you have kids who, oh, not my dad's music again. Fortunately, we're lucky enough that our kids like our music, and sometimes we like some of theirs as well. Not all of it, but most of it. But Def Leppard's one of those kind of medium grounds, and they've never been to a concert before. So I want you to take this journey real quick. So we, you know, the kids went to school first and foremost because school comes first. And my wife and I, you know, had a nice little dinner thing. Again, we're celebrating our anniversary. And we went and got the kids to go to, you know, get to bite to eat beforehand because you need to do that. If you go to a concert, you eat at the venue or at the concert, you are asking for trouble. Trust me on that one. So we got a quick bite to eat before we went in there as a family to get ready for this concert. And then we went to the parking lot and parked in the parking lot. And I don't know about everyone else in the world, but tailgating is not meant for just football or sports. We also do that at rock concerts. So as we sat in the parking lot for a few minutes and rocked out to some Motley Crue, and some Def Leppard. And granted, Motley Crue was not at this concert. It was just a lot of the music we were listening to was a various collection of classic rock. So as we're sitting there, and then a little bit, it was time to go line up to get ready to go into the venue. It was an outdoor venue. It was a very nice night. And this is their first concert. And they're young, fairly young. And I come to find out this is really my wife's first real concert. Taking those things into account, I've been to many concerts. But, you know, taking that step and passing that to my family was a lot more important to me because it was special. It was me introducing them to something and treating them to something they normally haven't. This is the big deal. This is their first live, real rock show. That's a cool feeling. And also help on their perspective, they probably feel like, wow, we're going to see our first rock show. All the kids in school are going to be really jealous. Of course, all the kids in school, you'd be surprised how many of them probably didn't even know who Def Leppard was. Probably not a lot of them. The teachers might. You never know, though. Like I said, to each their own. But we get to when we go to the lineup, they have a lot of the radio stations nearby, and they're playing games outside. They're playing cornhole. You guys ever seen cornhole? That's kind of, they have these two wooden planks, and they put them across from each other, and you throw bean bags into the hole, cornhole. I don't know. It's kind of a variation of, if you really think about it, it's kind of like skee-ball in a way. where you try to throw the beanbag and get it as close to the hole as possible, or like basketball. I don't know. I can compare it to many things. It's kind of its own thing, but it's fun. Horseshoes is another way to look at it. Kind of played similar, actually, if you really think about it as well. But anyway, they were playing that. So my son and I and my daughter and my wife were playing that for a little while. And then one of the radio stations had a contest where they were asking questions. And if you got the questions right, you got to get upgraded. And I did that. Lucky me. And fortunately, they asked questions I knew the answers to. And we got upgraded, which is awesome. But then something even more awesome happened. So we got upgraded because of that, right? And then as we go in, we come to find out in our area, the security guard said, hey, we're going to be upgrading some more. Why don't you, if you sign on to be the designated driver, you can get upgraded to up there, which was 5 rows from the stage. Well, guess what? Spoiler alert, I don't drink or drug or smoke or anything else. So that was a no-brainer. So I quickly signed up for that, and we found ourselves 5 rows from the stage for their first concert to see Def Leppard and REO, Speedwagon, and Tesla, which to this day the kids love. They love all that music, and they still sing a lot of it. And we hope to go back again as a family. It's just times have come in 2020. No one went anywhere. So, it was a memorable night. Of course, you know, my son at one point did fall asleep during one of the Def Leppard songs. It was a long night. I mean, concerts are a long deal. It's nighttime, you know. He only fell asleep for a few minutes, but he woke up just in time to get back into the whole groove and things. In between setups is what happened. So it was a good time. Everyone had fun, and it's an experience that they always remember and they still talk about. Versus how many gifts can you give to someone that they remember the gift you gave them? Where is it right now? So for me, I always find it important to go places to experience some type of event or activity together as a family or together with that person who you're celebrating with versus just give them a gift. That's not just my own family, but that's just like anybody. I would much rather bring someone someplace to have that experience versus, you know, just give them some trinket. Okay, that's just me. I'm just curious how everyone else feels about that. How do you deal with that? Anywho. And also, how many people would be bringing their kids to a rock concert, like a Def Leppard, Hard, or whatever, or Motley Crue, whatever? Because I can tell you that I'm someone who has, you know, been to many concerts, and I've seen people at concerts of various different ages. And I've even questioned some concerts, like, I don't know if I bring mine to that, but I might. Sorry, responding to multiple things as I'm talking to you all here on my show. We talked about me getting messages and responding to the messages. That's kind of what I do. Here we are. Coolness. All right, giggity. So, back to me. All right, so that's kind of one thing. Like, what do you guys do, and how do you know when your kids are old enough to go to something like that? Do you bring them to places like that? I think the best way to look at it is use your own parental judgment and look at the show you're going to. If you're going to a show where there's a good chance there's going to be drugs, alcohol, violence, nudity, graphic violence, bad language, and if these are things that really offend you as a parent, but you like rocking up to the music or whatever, it's probably not a good idea to bring your kids there if you don't want your kids to do the same or rock out the same way. But if you're people who can appreciate the art for what it is and whatever the case may be, keep an eye on them, but also use your parental judgment. That's what we were gifted with as parents. Remember, we were once young. And I want you to think back to try to remember what it was like when you were younger and think, would I, how would I deal with this if I went to this concert? Would this be appropriate for me? Again, you can't compare yourself to what your parents would do, but on the same sense, you are now the parent, and that's a cool thing, which is an amazing realism, isn't it? When you realize that you're the parents now, not your parents' parents. Kind of cool. I don't know, but it is for me anyway. All right. So concerts are fun. Movies are fun to go with people and stuff like that and whatnot. Now, when it comes to wrestling, even, you know, it's kind of one of those things, right? My son doesn't like pyrotechnics, so he's not really wanting to go to any live pay-per-views because they use a lot of pyrotechnics at the big arenas. I get that. If you don't like pyrotechnics or fireworks, that's probably not a good idea to go to something like that. On the same sense, that's the same thing can be said about if you wanted to go see, say, Metallica or sometimes Motley Crue, definitely AC/DC. These are shows you would want to avoid. And for those people out there, and that is some examples. If you guys have similar people who are afraid of such things, those are some examples of shows you probably might not want to bring your kids to if they're sensitive to loud bangs and visuals and so forth. But on the flip side of that, let's say you want to have your kids experience a rock show. I think you should be okay with something like Def Leppard, Heart. Aerosmith doesn't usually use a lot of pyrotechnics either. For the most part, a lot of lights and very colorful, but I don't think I've ever seen any pyrotechnics at Aerosmith. But then again, Aerosmith, look how old they are, man. But they're still rocking. But a lot of those bands won't usually use a lot of pyrotechnics. Elton John, you will not see any pyrotechnics. People have often looked at, going to shows. And I hear so many people talk about, the experiences they've had at various other concerts and so forth. Like Elton John's a good example of this. I've heard for many times Elton John is an awesome performer live. I went to see Elton John live one time, and I'm not going to lie to you, it was not an overly fantastic show. In fact, at one point, my aunt and uncle who went left after the first group of songs because they were so bored. Granted, right after they left is when he started, doing the callbacks, and it picked up a little bit. But here's the thing. When you go to a concert like that, and if you're a performer, right, you got to remember, people there are wanting to have a good time and are wanting to rock out. They don't want to hear sob stories. They don't mind hearing, the backstory of how a song came to be and all these things, but we don't need to hear, the sorrows and the negativity and the woe is me's going along with them, because that drags the audience down. And ultimately we'll put them to sleep, which is not what you want. At this particular concert, that first act was absolutely horrible because it was just dull. It was lifeless. It was Elton John sitting at a piano, and he talked about his views on various things. He talked about breaking up with his exes and being taken advantage of by exes and being abused by exes. And it might be fine and good to have that included somewhere, but to do that after every single song and then have these songs be so dreary and, whatever, it just sucks the mood out of the audience. And then after he went through this whole thing, he would bring in Crocodile Rock out of nowhere. It's like, come on, dude, pick it up, pick a place, really. Now, granted, I mean, I've seen the biopic for Elton John, and I've seen Elton John live, and I don't know, and I've also been told by people who've seen Elton John with, say, Billy Joel, and they said it was a fantastic show. In fact, my aunt and uncle said it was a good show. When they went to see Elton John by himself, not so much. They left, like I said, first set. Now, to be honest and to be fair, I think when you're a performer, when it comes to music, it's not easy, you know. I think when you're a performer, you know, have to kind of judge the audience sometimes and feel out for them. And I think it's important when you're doing when you're a band or a singer or a performer, and you're going to be doing covers. Well, if you're going to do covers, then you should be okay. But if you're going to be doing, say, new stuff, right? It's probably a good idea to do a couple songs that people are familiar with. And then add in one or two songs in each set. Because that way there you can really get a good judge for how the audience responds. Because if you start a concert off or a show off with a brand new song never heard before and you get crickets, but then after that you do the song that put you on the map and now they're all alive, well, you just kind of killed the audience already. You want to have that happy medium. Get them ready. Get them primed. Get something that people are familiar with. And then work your new stuff in as the set goes on. Now, you might say, well, Jazz, how do you know anything about a concert? Ready? Listen to this fun story I'm about to tell you. So we go back to the year 2001. And I told this story a couple times before about how I was working for a day program with adults adults with mental illness. We were helping them transition and have them, you know, help them find work and go to school and find meaning and kind of treat them like regular people because they are regular people, just, you know, different, various issues or whatever. But we help them overcome those things. We give them tools to help them adjust, and we help them with, you know, various different other degrees of supports. One of those being a social program. How do they interact, you know, well with others and whatever? Well, in the year 2001, I was with this program for a number of years. I was their social program coordinator, which basically meant my job was to set up all of their social programs. So I would call various different places to get tickets, and because these people don't have a lot of money. I mean, you know, some of them are at home. Some of them aren't at home. They're in group homes. Some of them don't have enough money to barely, you know, buy lunch, let alone go out for a baseball game. So my job was really to get places like the sports teams to donate tickets or to set up activities there. They wouldn't have to spend a lot of money, but they could also have a good time and have fun. And thankfully, there's a lot of great programs out there. So the program got to go see various different baseball games, football games, hockey games, basketball games, etc. We got a plethora of tickets from all over the place, and I'm so happy for them because to see that people have a good time and enjoy themselves really meant a lot to me. I like to see them have a good time and enjoying themselves like anyone else because they should be treated just like everybody else, and they have every right to have as much fun as anyone else. And just because they may have, you know, a mental illness or they might have a deficit doesn't make them any less of a person that they should be treated, that they should be having just as much fun as anyone else. In the field, they call it stigma. When other people look at someone with mental illness and they look at them like they're a disease or they're going to catch it or whatever, it's something that, believe it or not, actually sadly is still a thing. But being someone who is an anti-bullying advocate and being someone who stands up for people and being someone who doesn't like to see people treated differently based upon something else is absolutely bogus. So I like to try to do what I can to help those kinds of people. So needless to say, 2001 was when I just got back from, you know, Chattanooga, Tennessee, as I told that story, I think on the last show or a couple shows ago, where I sang the song, The Good Old Boy, The Misunderstood Boy, in front of 500 people from all over the world at the International Clubhouse Conference. That's what it was called. Now, this event had people come from all over the world. When I say all over the world, I do not mean just the America. And it's not even a – that's a very much a mis – that's a mis – it's probably I'm really probably underselling it really when I say all over the world. There are these clubhouses that help people like these people all over the world. Canada, South America, Europe, United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Switzerland, Germany, Italy, Russia, Ukraine, Japan, China, Korea. You name it, there was a delegate from each of those clubhouses from each of those countries. And all of these people came all the way in this last day, and of course all over the United States, as I mentioned, Canada, I already mentioned that too. But all of these delegates are here, and that's where I sang this song, The Good Old Boy, or The Misunderstood Boy, as I would rename it. And I sing it a cappella, no music. Fun fact, I do play piano. I can play the piano pretty awesome. I've been playing pretty much anything with keys since I was very young. Self-taught, of course, but I'm pretty good with them. I can also play drums pretty well. And the kazoo, which I don't think classifies as an actual instrument, but I can rock a kazoo as well. Much to the chagrin of everybody who has ever heard a kazoo. But anyway, I sang The Misunderstood Boy in front of those 500 people. And, you know, it got a lot of people thinking, well, gee, I didn't know you could sing those songs or wrote songs. And of course, people are familiar with my writing and whatnot. And, you know, fun fact, I wrote a lot of lyrics, a lot of different songs over the years. So for fun, and this is a fun story here, and talk about interesting times. And you talk about a journey. Oh, boy. We had the very first, quote, Jazz and Friends concert at this clubhouse, where we had all the members and the staff come, and I would perform, quote, my best hits, end quote. Of course, you know, the headliner, the main event had to be The Misunderstood Boy, because that was the song that put me on the map, kind of, again, or reminded me that I was actually pretty good at writing song lyrics. As a writer, I don't know if you guys remember, when I had Richard M. Bourne on the show, I was talking to him about how, you know, sometimes I have a habit of forgetting that I wrote something, and then I'll see it a long time after the fact, get really into it, and realize that I wrote that. Well, this is one of those cases where after The Misunderstood Boy, I went through my Rolodex of lyrics to songs I wrote, and I had to put a set list together for this concert. Now, of course, they would have... You know, I gave everyone who came to the concert a little, insert for the, you know, what was going to be heard on this set. Now, for the record, normally speaking, when you go to a regular, like, concert, you know, bands do not usually hand out what they're going to be playing that night. But I did. I let people know what they're going to be hearing because a lot of these people have never heard any of these songs before. And let me tell you, when I say I pulled out the greatest hits, oh, boy. Some of those greatest hits, and I kid you not, these are actual songs that I wrote the lyrics to. Some of those greatest hits include, I'm laughing because some of the early ones are really cringeworthy. Anyway, Thank You, Mother Goose was the first lyrics to every song I wrote. That was written in probably first grade. Yes, I sang that song, and again, this was in 2001, so I'm 21 years old singing a song that I wrote when I was in first grade. Anyway, I sang, yeah, like I said, those hits included Thank You, Mother Goose. That was the first one. And then Hole in My Heart was another one that was about my love. That was a love song that I wrote. Well, kind of a love song I wrote in second grade for the second grade talent show. About the girl who would move away and never tell me the way she went and broke my little heart. And then it just one song after another. And then there was Saying Goodbye. And then there was you know, a couple other ones. And then there was Please Tie Your Shoes. Yes, that's a song, folks. Please Tie Your Shoes. Now, this, much like Elton John, in between each of these sets, I had to really give people kind of where these songs came from. And this one specifically came from me constantly reminding a friend of mine to constantly tie his shoe. So to the point where I wrote a whole song about him tying his shoe. Anything today that would probably be considered what they call a PSA on a reel or something about, you know, safety on tying your shoes. But listen, I was like, I think I was 13 when I wrote that song, and I was 21 when I was singing this song. So the goodwill was there. I also sang Real Friends Don't Kick Me Down, They Help You Up. I sang the original F4L anthem, which a lot of people enjoyed, some. And a lot of people loved the part in the F4L anthem where I actually had to roar. They thought that was the best thing since rice pudding. In fact, parties after the fact, because we had a thing called a VHS back in the day, kids. We used to record things on a VHS, and we used to play them back on a thing called a VCR, which is kind of like a DVD player, only it's with a video cassette. And basically, we watched that almost at all my parties. People wanted to see this concert. It was kind of like I think it was an ongoing jeer at me after a while. But when it came to the F4L anthem, you should hear how many people laughed and cried from laughing so hard over the roars and the meows of the F4L anthem. And I know you guys are thinking, you guys want to hear what the song is now. Well, you're not going to hear it today, so don't worry about it. But so you're going to have to take my word for that one. But no, then it would progress, and it was probably like 13 or 14, I think it had to have been 14 songs on the list. I say 14 because of the lucky number. I don't think I've ever done anything, I can't end it on 13, so 14 is always going to be the minimum or the most I could do at once. If you'll notice, eventually I'm going to be doing like a 14 list, a top 14, not top 10 or top 20, but a 14 list. Because floors are lucky, so there you go. And I'll be doing those eventually for you guys as far as 14 lists, because those are fun sometimes. But you got to be done right. So there's that. But, yeah, that was the Jazz and Friends concert. Now, when I say Jazz and Friends concert, there was another kid who opened up for me, who introduced me to the other people there. So one of the clientele there introduced me to everyone. And before that, he sang a song for me in front of all these people. And yeah, that's also on the tape. And so that was the very first Jazz and Friends concert. And by the way, that was the only Jazz and Friends concert to that point. I did sing a lot back in those days. I did a lot of karaoke, and I still will do some karaoke. And for the most part now, a lot of my singing is done usually when I'm out and about, when I'm waiting for a bus or waiting for a train or, you know, out and about in general. When I'm walking, I do a lot of singing. This is actually by design, actually, because I find that walking and singing at the same time is actually really good for your cardio and your breathing techniques. So fun health tip for you guys out there, whoever does health things. If you, if you're out and about and you're walking, and if you do a little song, it doesn't have to be the best thing in the world, but if you're singing while you're walking around, it actually helps your breathing techniques. It helps you with being able to, keep your cardio and your endurance up. So quick tip to you guys. I've given that to several people. Hopefully people use it. And it could be awkward sometimes, like I said. Sometimes, either walking or whatever down the street or jogging. I don't know if I would run doing this, but I mean, I guess theoretically, if you really want to test your lung capacity, you would. But I suggest power walking to do that, and then just having your music on. That's ultimately the best way to do it, in my opinion. So there's a health tip for you thrown in here in this random Talking Tuesday that we've already talked about what we do for gifts versus going to events instead. We've talked about first concert stories. We've also talked about the infamous Jez and Friends concert out of nowhere and whatnot. So let me ask you guys this. What are people's opinion on Valentine's Day? Do you guys celebrate Valentine's Day? And I know a lot of people probably think, well, of course I do. I have to. I love my so-and-so, my boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, whatever the case may be. And, you know, that's great. And to each their own. If this is something everyone does and that's something you do, so, you know, there you go. You do that. For me, personally, and my wife, we don't celebrate Valentine's Day. In fact, over the years, we've developed our own tradition of what's called an anti-Valentine's Day celebration, which is usually us, you know, doing our own thing, and usually we're, you know, probably watching a horror movie and maybe getting a bite to eat. It's not because we don't love each other or we don't care about each other. It's because we believe that you should do those things all year round, and we don't need a certain day of the year to tell us to do that. Because truth be told, I like to surprise my wife and my kids with things here and there when I do, because I like to see people happy. I like to see the random reactions. I don't need one day of the year to surprise my wife or my kids with some type of gesture of love or token of love and gratitude. Whether I'm at a store and I see a new candy bar and I know my wife is a foodie, so she has to try it, so I'll pick it up for her. And the same thing goes for my kids. If I know that my son's around or whatever, I'm going to get him a Dr. Pepper. Or my daughter wants a new tea, I'll get her some tea or a coffee. That's kind of how we do things. And I don't need a certain day of the year to remind me to share my love and show my gratitude by giving them a blanket here and there, but also showing them, telling them that I love them. Because all honesty, I tell them I love them whenever I talk to them. Because you should. Because here comes some hard stuff for you guys. You know, when it comes to those powerful words as I love you, when it comes to words and when it comes to saying what's important, I really feel that you need to let people know how you feel. This is the question that used to get asked of me a lot. Like, how do I tell someone I like them? Or should I tell them? When do you know when you love someone? Should I tell them I love them or don't I? Well, I think you know if you look in your heart if you love someone or not. And I think you need to be aware of all of their language and all of their red flags, whether it's receptive or whether it's going to be rejected. But as far as telling someone you love them, I think that's a very powerful word and a powerful commitment. I don't think they're words that are just thrown around. I don't think it's just a simple quote. But it also has a double meaning now, doesn't it, right? You see, if I say I love you to my wife, it's a different love that I have for my kids. And if I say I love my kids and my wife, it's a different love for my friends. But ultimately, I have no issue telling people I love them because I do. I do love my friends. I love the F4L. And part of being F4L is not being ashamed of telling people that you care about them. Letting them know, hey, I love you, man. You're okay. And again, this is something that was, you know, met with all kinds of criticism. Oh, you can't tell another dude you love them. Get out of here. Listen, life is short. If you have someone you care about who is your friend, there's no reason you can't tell them that you love them. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't mean you have to have romantic relationship feelings for them. It just means that you connect with them, you appreciate them, and that you love them as a brother, perhaps, or a sister in some cases, and so forth. Saying I love you just people that you have while you have them is so important. When it comes to speaking with people, you need to take every single moment you have with them. You have to take every single one of those moments, for those individual moments, for what they are. A gift. A gift to tell them how you feel. So at the end of the day, you don't have any questions in your heart. Did I tell them that I love them enough? Did I say it? Do they know that I love them? And I am very happy to say that my wife and my kids never have to ask if I love them. I still tell my wife and my kids to this day, in public, in private, I love them. And I still will give them hugs and I'll still give them kisses because that's what we do. I'm affectionate and I care about them. Do I hug and kiss every one of my friends? No, I'll hug them. I have no issue hugging a friend of mine. I'm vaccinated or whatever, and even before the vaccination thing or whatever since. If it's a friend of mine, I don't mind hugging a friend of mine. That's what you do when you see friends and family. You hug them. I have no issue giving someone a hug. Kissing them is a little different. I'm not going to kiss everybody. My aunt, I think my female aunts, I'll kiss them maybe on the cheek or whatever. But other than that, I have no problem hugging people and telling them I love them. Their brothers, their sisters, there's no difference to me. My friends are my family. I don't think that's a question here. If you're in the F4L, you're family. So if I see someone in the F4L, I'm probably going to hug you. Or if at the very least, I'm going to shake your hand. We'll see how that goes. I'll do the man-to-man hug, as we used to call it in the F4L. And everyone has a different man-to-man hug. It's fun. Oh, man. I laugh because I'm brought back to memories of a lot of my friends in the past and friends I've lost along the way. I laugh because, you know, you have these friends and when you have these relationships and you hope that they're there with you for life, the reality of it is they may live with you for the rest of your life, but physically, sometimes they leave us, and all we have is their memories. And it's those memories that kind of keep sometimes us going, and sometimes it keeps us happy. And like when I talk about, you know, the hug, and the man-to-man hug, as my friend Rick used to call it. remembering certain quotes that each of them had. I always find that whenever we share these memories about the ones who came along the way, all of those F4Ls we've lost, when we talk about them and we honor them, they still are within us and they still are still very much present within our lives. They were still impactful in our lives. And those are the memories that will keep us going and keep us to know that we're not alone and that, you know, we have their memories to keep us alive and well and keep us going. A lot of people, reflecting to, a lot of people ask me, when you're F4L, does that mean everyone lives in the same area and whatever? And the reality of it is, I mean, just like in life, everyone moves on and everyone kind of goes their own way. I lived one place, each of the five of us in the original F4L, we lived in five different locations in the same state, but all five different locations. And then after that, everyone went kind of their own way. Some people moved out of state. Some people went to college. Some people went to trade school. But the reality of it is your real friends, and this is another quote, get ready to mark it down. Another quote that something that has helped me over the years is no matter how far your real friends, no matter how far they travel, they'll always come back to you. And that is a true statement because it's always proven to be true. Ace, who was my closest F4L, he didn't live too far away from me per se, but day or night, night or day, if either one of us needed anything, we didn't even have to ask. Usually we knew when someone needed something or, you know, we'll ask, hey, listen, I'm having a hard time. Didn't even have to finish the sentence, and one of us was on our way to the other one to make sure they were okay. Pooh Bear, when she was in Virginia, we used to talk to her on a regular basis, and then unfortunately what happened, the four of us were in a car on the way down to Virginia to find out what's going on, make sure she was okay. Unfortunately, it was not met with great news when we got there. But you see, those are the kind of the memories that we live within us. Even though, you know, some of them have horrific stories of where they went or how they went down, the fact that they went down happy, that they went down knowing that they were loved by the F4L and that they were F4L, it just lives within us all. And it's a special feeling to know that you do belong to people, and you do belong within us, and that you're not a reject, you're not an outcast, you do belong, you are worthy. And I think, for the most part, I think it's an important message. I think it's important for people to know that they do belong, and that they do have every right to be who they are, and they're respected for such. Pooh Bear was full of life, and it was a joy to be around. You could talk to her about anything, and she could talk to us about it, whatever. But she could also play basketball better than half of the guys can, and she was, you know, someone who could throw down if she really needed to. And she was someone who we would back her right up, and vice versa. But these are the people who would mold what the F4L is. If it wasn't for them, along with myself, and not just, a lot of people credit me with being the leader and the founder of the F4L. There was five of us. And really, it's taken over these years to get it to go where it is now. And that's a special thing to understand, because for other people who don't really understand what the F4L is, if some people just say, oh, it's just four little things thrown together, it's just a little acronym. But for me to live it and to see where it's come from, where it started from, and where it is now, what a feeling that is for me. Not because I started it, but because those who are F4L, I know that they know that they belong, and that I know that we're here, and that our message continues to grow, that our lives are still going to intertwine. And people from all around the world are still F4L because of something that five of us kids put together back in 1996 officially. 2023, it's still all around the world. That's a humbling feeling, to know that we were part of something that started, but it is not over. And there's much work to be done. I know, I just got a little down a little bit here, huh? Over the show. We're talking about concerts 1 minute, and now we're talking about, you know, really taking those moments. That's ultimately what this segment will hear is really taking those moments to really show the people, tell the people who you know, who are close to you, that you love them. I think that's important. If you're a parent, a dad, I can't speak for the mothers, really, because I'm not a mom. I'm a dad. I think that there is an old stereotype that dads aren't supposed to be sympathetic, that dads aren't supposed to be empathetic, that dads aren't supposed to be, they're not supposed to be, give hugs and give rational decisions, and they're not supposed to be this, that, the other thing. Well, I say, you know what, whatever. I don't know who wrote the book on fatherhood, but I know how life goes, and I know how I am as a father. And I can tell you this, that at the end of the day, we as parents want our kids to have the best examples, the best lives that they can possibly be. We want them to be happy. We want them to be safe. We want them to grow up to be successful. Every parent wants that, or they should want that. So when it comes to, you know, as a parent, you know, are we too macho to tell our kids that we love them? Get out of here. If some people think that, well, no, I don't tell them I love them, but I go to work every day. That shows them. No, that's not showing them. That's doing an action. So listen, I get why you do what you do. If you're working all the time to support your family, yes, that's a showing that you care. That's a showing that you love them. But telling them that you love them, that is important too. So homework assignment is for this week, for the rest of this week, no matter who it is, whether it be your father, your son, your mother, your sister, your aunt, whatever the case may be, grandmother, tell those you care about, whether it be whoever I mentioned, someone you care about, tell them you love them. Tell them why you care about them. Tell them thank you. Show them. Don't just, you know, say, do, or whatever. Tell them that you love them. If you're a father who works, you know, seven days a week, 365 days a year, 9 to 5, you still have time in your busy day to tell your kids that you love them. Because that's ultimately what your first priority is, not mushing the pencil or doing work. Work is important because it puts food on the table and it keeps a roof over your head and all these things. But at the end of the day, if you don't have that relationship with your kids, if you don't have that feeling of whatever, then you're not succeeding in your goal as a father or a parent in general. As again, I can't speak for the moms because I'm not a mom. I grew up with a mom who was a single mom, basically. I had a stepfather briefly for a little while there and a bunch of dudes who came in and out. But for the most part, it was my mom who did all of it. And then I separated at one point and became my own person. So I'm telling you that it's important to tell our kids that we love them. Make sure they know that. Don't just give them things or take them places. Tell them you love them while you're doing those things. That might sound naive. That might sound like it's cliche. That might sound over the top. No, it's not. At the end of the day, I would feel a lot better knowing that everyone who I've interacted with knows exactly how I feel about them. Because at least at the end of the day, they don't have to have any questions when it comes to that. Did they care about me? Were they proud of me? Do they love me? Or whatever. My kids will tell you that, yes, not only do I love them, they love me and my wife. Not only that, they'll tell you why. And that's because of years of putting in a relationship and taking care of them and all of the other things that go in between. See, the old way of looking at things is as the fatherhood part of it, is we go to work, we earn money, the wife stays home and does all the cooking and cleaning, takes care of the kids. We come home and we eat, we see the kids. In the old way is we were the disciplinaries. And then once we did that, then we're expected to have the respect of everyone. And then we get to go to bed. And then do it all over again. That's an old way of doing things. And this isn't the 50s anymore. This is the current days. And I got to tell you also, if you're one of these people who grew up in a household like that, ask yourself, how did this make you feel when you went through this? Did you absolutely feel love? I think for the most part, a lot of people can tell you when they grew up, they didn't hear their dads or the males in their lives say, I love you. Or I care, or I'm proud. I grew up with no dad, so I had that advantage because I never had a dad to tell me that, but I had a coach, a sensei, and they would take those places, and they respected me and whatnot. I don't think it was necessarily love, considering it's a business atmosphere. And if you're people who look at things like that as these people love me, well, you're going to get your heart broken because they're there to train you to do whatever it is. And they very much might care about you outside, or they might care about your situation. But at the end of the day, you're their student, and that has to end there. And, you know, that's how that works. So it's the sad part. I'm not saying you can't have a good relationship with them. You know, be respectful of them. Because I can tell you this, you know, a lot of my senseis, my trainers, my coaches, I still, the ones who are alive still right now, I still, on the most part, I stay in touch with a lot of them. Unfortunately, my wrestling trainer, the late great Killer Kowalski, is no longer with us, but I still remember a lot of the lessons he taught me, both in and out of the ring. I still remember how he, you know, taught me how to interact with people and how important fans are. I still remember all those kinds of things. And then my sensei, I remember about the drive and the heart of doing homework, the human chest atmosphere, and the being able to dissect an opponent before getting to the opponent, before the end of the match. And along the way, I would pick up things here and there from other people like that. Ultimately, it all led me to be in the dad that myself. And not a day went by that I never told my son, my daughter, or my wife that I love them. Granted, you know, my wife and I, you know, had, like I said before, we went from time, you know, we weren't ready to kind of fine-tune the relationship. We wanted to see where we were at. It didn't mean I love my kids any less. I still love my kids very much so, and I'm proud of both of them. I'm proud of my wife. I'm proud of my kids. And I'm glad that I'm able to tell my kids that I love them. And I'm glad that they know that. There's a certain element of respect and a certain element of a sense of accomplishment when you realize that you have that relationship with your kids. Now, this is, you know, for the parents out there and the dads out there, I'm hoping you guys can relate to this because, you know, I've done a lot of things in my life. I've accomplished a lot. I've got a lot of gifts. I've received many awards, many championships. I won many titles. I won many tournaments. Won swing meets. I've had many titles, like I said. I've performed in front of many people. Made a difference in a lot of people's lives. But the one thing above all that I'm proudest of most is being a dad and having known that I helped raise two of the greatest human beings to live. That's my kids. And I always knew I was destined to be a dad. And I knew that way back, you know, when I was almost a father at 15. Things didn't work out that way. But sometimes when we're geared towards that already, there's no sense going back. We go with what we know. I talk about that, but I don't talk to you about how the fact that, you know, I was already doing a lot of father-like things and a lot of guidance kind of things for my brothers and my sister when I was starting at age 9, which is why I'm often surprised I'm often wondered how other kids can do so many other things, but yet they can't boil an egg or iron a shirt or do things of that nature because I had to grow up in a household like that where I had to learn how to cook and clean and do all those things and take care of myself and three other kids. My brothers and my sister are only a year apart from each other, and the second oldest is only 2 years younger than me. So he's the oldest of that three, and then they're a year apart after that. But when you really think about it, right, I raised them, because my mother would, you know, sometimes my mother would, you know, have times she was, you know, wanted to take a break, and sometimes she would not make the greatest decisions in life, but she was still, you know, when she was there, she was there. She was innovative. But on the same sense, you know, I grew up basically alone. I grew up raising my two brothers and my sister from nine. I learned how to cook. I learned how to clean. I learned how to do laundry. I learned how to help, you know, because I was, you know, a couple years older than them. Help them with school. And all of this, you know, went under the radar for a long time. I did that for 3 years straight until I was 11. And that's when the kind of the jig was up, so to speak. And in the middle of the judo tournament, that's when my stepfamily would come and pick us up and bring us to live with them. I've told that story before. We're not going to talk about that now. But the moral of the story is, you know, that parental kind of mindset was already instilled upon me at a young age, and it never really shut off. And then when, you know, I thought I was going to be a dad at 15, I was already ready to raise our son together. That didn't work out. And of course I, you know, felt a lot of guilt towards that not happening. And then years later, fast forward to now, we have my wife and I today have two of the most amazing kids today, and it's a blessing. It's honestly one of the best things, one of the best feelings to know that you are a dad and that your kids know that you're there for them. Your kids can go to you when they need to talk to you. My daughter will tell you that I'm one of her favorite people to talk to because I can talk about pretty much anything, even some of the girl stuff, which don't ask. I'm not going to remember or repeat any of it. But I've had stories, and I have reflections, and I have ways of listening that not everyone does. Remember, everyone, there's three sides of every story. And something I've been blessed with is being able to separate those, usually in most situations. But I also think it's important for us to listen to our kids when they tell us things. Sometimes, you know, we as parents want to automatically, you know, side with other adults who are, for example, in schools, for example, is a good example where, you know, a teacher will call us and tell us, hey, your kid's acting up because of A, B, and C. But when we talk to our kids, you know, we find out that the teacher, you know, first and foremost, isn't even in the class, half of the class. Or when they are in the class, they're asking our son or our daughter for help with something. Or we have a gym teacher who threatens to slap the dye out of my daughter's hair because he didn't like the fact that my daughter, who had a medical excuse why she didn't have to participate, was deciding to read and draw in gym class rather than work out and do the sport. Needless to say, it's important to listen to our kids because sometimes, you know, I think the instinct is, well, if a teacher says that they're adults, then they automatically know better. And I'm going to tell you this. If you know your kids well enough and you have that relationship with your kids, you should know right away that if your kids are, if this is something your kids are known for, then, you know, maybe it's not a surprise for you, but you should give them the benefit of the doubt anyway and hear them out before you get all upset and start the disciplinary stuff. But on the flip side of that, be weary and know that not everyone's perfect, not all teachers are saints, and that our kids aren't always storytellers. How many horror movies have we seen? This is a great example right here, and this is odd that I'd have to use this for an example. But when you look at any horror movie, pretty much, that has little kids in it, how many times do we as parents watch these films and the kids will say, hey, there's, you know, there's a monster on the bed, there's a monster in my closet, there's a ghost here, there's this, that, and the other thing. And we as parents quickly, and the kids, the parents in the movies quickly, you know, assume that the kid's making it up, it's a joke, there's nothing there. If my kids tell me there's something there, then I'm going to listen to them and I'm going to see what it is that they're talking about. But you need to know your kids. If your kids are people who are known for being troublemakers, well, then you probably have an idea that your kid probably was, you know, goofing around or whatever. But again, give them the benefit of the doubt. Listen to them first. Because it might be in a case like, for example, my daughter who was laughing and then the teacher who threatened to slap the hair out of her, the color out of her hair. Could you imagine saying that to a 13-year-old girl if you're a grown adult? Just think of that. I'll tell you, he won't threaten it again because that's never going to happen again. He's not a teacher anymore or a gym teacher or anything else. But the moral of the story is we need to listen to our kids. I think this comes in many different avenues. A lot of the times we as parents, we get busy with work or whatever. It's important to have 5-10 minutes at the end of the day to check in with your kids. And I think that's a doable thing for anybody. If you're someone who works the day shift or whatever, your kids are home, pop your head in as they're in bed or whatever and check with them. Talk to them for 10 minutes. How was your day? How's everything going? When you do that, you have that open communication with your kids. Let them know that they can talk to you about whatever. So that if anything does happen, they can come and talk to you and you can nip it in the bud and you can help them. Because that's our job as parents, is to make sure our kids are okay, make sure they're happy and safe. Not just to make sure they're fed and have a roof overhead. That kind of parenting and that kind of, if that's all you think that it's to be a parent, well, that's great. They have, there's a roof over their head and there's food in their belly, but because they're depressed or they're getting bullied or tormented, they're miserable inside. And that's a problem lie because you didn't think to ask the questions because you're working all day and you put food on their table. Food that, let's face it, if they're depressed and they have something bothering them, they're probably not eating. So I'm not trying to guilt shame you or parent shame people out there. Things happen. I get it. But we need to do a better job with communication with our kids and tell them the people that we know that we love them or care about them and reaching out to those we do. I guess that's the whole that was kind of tie into that whole little segment I just went in here, was just kind of making sure that at the end of the day, you've said all of you need to say to whomever it is you need to say it to. Well, maybe something's bothering you about someone. Maybe something's been bothering you for a long time and you can get it off your chest. Well, I say it to them. Get it off your chest. You owe it to yourself. Don't live with regret or say, I wish I had, or I should have said this, I should have said that. Should-haves could not do nothing. Should-haves isn't even in the language. In the words of the great Master Yoda, do or do not do. There is no try. That's a good one. That's a good philosophy. I'll try to do this. I'll try to talk to them. I'll try to be good. No. Either do or don't do. Because that's how it would be. All honesty. So, So Valentine's Day, we've talked about Valentine's Day as a Hallmark holiday. What makes a Hallmark holiday is the fact that basically it's all about selling cards and chocolate and whatever the case may be to spoil our loved ones with that to show their appreciation. But really, Hallmark wants us to buy beautifully written cards and get flowers and whatever to sell whatever. And the reason we don't celebrate that is because we should believe you should tell people and show people you love them all year round, not just one day, which is why we do not celebrate Valentine's Day. Now, that brings us into our last little bit of a thing, and that's talking a little bit about icons of the F4L on our YouTube show. I know, what a transition, right? I bet your head's like, what the heck? How did we end up here? Well, I'll tell you. You know, on our show and on Icons of EF4L, we have some amazing people on our roster, real life people based upon. And we have tournaments every year for various different things. We have different, big shows coming up. During the summer, we have the open tag team invitational, which is open to any duo out there to find out who the best tag team or duo is of across all universes. And in June, we're going to be bringing back the Open MMA Grand Prix, the Open MMA tournament we're going to be doing. So all of the best fighters of all time will be taking part in this tournament. By the way, if you're one of these people who are not currently on my roster, who want to be on the roster, want to show that you belong here, please reach out to me at WOWDreamMatches, DREAMMATCHES, @gmail.com to step in the ring for our 2023 Dream Masters Icons of the F4L presents the MMA Sickness Tournament, which we're going to have again in June. It's going to be probably a weekend thing. So the best of the best will be battling it out until we crown the icon, the 2023 icon of MMA. So last year's winner was Ty the Devil O'Dell, and he is going to be taking part in along with other brothers and along with our current roster. And who knows, some other people will be popping in there as well to try to take that crown. So do you have what it takes? We'll have to find out. You know, I talk a lot about, the icons of the F4L on YouTube. And it occurs to me that I've never actually sat there and told you individually about who these people are, how they came to be, and why they're important. So I'm going to be doing a new segment starting, not tonight, obviously, but probably closer to the weekend. Where I'm going to be talking to you guys about each of the people on our roster, who they are, why they are, why they're there, and a little background stuff here and there. So be looking for that, because there's reasons why they're on our roster. They belong there first and foremost, and because they're doing impressive things. So it is almost that time to wrap up yet again. So also coming up, I can tell you some shows that are coming up that are going to be pretty big. Later in February, I think we're planning on February 17th, I am going to have a number of my fellow Monster Mania staff family members on this podcast, number of us. We're going to come on here because we're going to get ready for March. March's Monster Mania event is going to be coming up March 13th through the 15th, I believe. Yeah, 13th through the 12th, I believe it is. And I'm going to be hosting a number of my fellow Monster Mania family members here on the podcast, as we're going to be kind of having an impromptu kind of a get-together and chat it up. And it's been a little while since we've all seen each other or talked to each other. So we're going to come on here and maybe answer some of the frequently asked questions people have ever had for a convention. Have you ever been to a pop culture convention? People have different ways of how to look at things and different ways to kind of have these things. So we're going to have a bunch of my fellow Monster Mania staff family members with me here on the podcast. And we're going to address some of those things. Plus, you can kind of hear about the fun things it is to work at these kinds of things and what these kinds of things mean to so many people. In the past, I've had my good friend Tim Collins on the show. And Tim is a guy who, I've met through Monster Mania, and we've become friends since then. Literally watched his son grow. And I think we're going to be seeing Tim down in Monster Mania as well in come March. But we're going to have a bunch of my fellow Monster Mania staff members here on, family members here on February 17th, I believe we're planning on. So that's an upcoming show you guys can look forward to. as well as, I guess, some other things coming down the pike. We're going to have some other guests come on the show, which I think you guys will enjoy. Some first-timers and some returning guests, which I think you guys have all missed and whatnot. And, yeah. So there's going to be a lot of big things coming up. I want to let you guys all know, you know, things are going really well. Things are all settling, things on our end. I'm going to have more details for Jazz and Friends Expo coming up on our next show. And, yeah, multiple other things we got going on. And, you know, it's been a very productive, random show today. I'd say so. And I want to say thank you guys for listening. I want to say thank you guys for taking time out of your days to listen to me talk about the F4L or talk about these old, you know, stories that mean so much, that are all life lessons, really, in some ways. You know, important to show and tell those we care about them that we care about them, because you don't know what tomorrow brings. That's the kind of underlying model here. We all wish we had a little longer with certain people that we don't know. We never knew what was going to happen. We don't know what everyone's time schedule is. So it's important to live every single moment, the moment, all the way to the fullest, and to share their love with each of those people together always. So again, to our friends, Derek, and to Batical, Datical, and Son, and whatever, our hearts go out to you guys, and we're thinking about you guys, we're pulling for you. If you guys need anything, hit me up, and I'll be happy to chat with you guys. Derek, you need someone to talk to, brother, I'm around. And it goes for everyone else as well. I'm also thinking, you know, I've been doing this podcast for a little while, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe it's time to start venturing out. And the YouTube show, well, that's still going the way it usually is. But, you know, I'm thinking, what if I was to have a co-host here on the show? What if I was to have someone to rattle ideas off of together? Could we realistically have a co-host on the F-World headquarters, where it's always been me thus far? Something worth thinking about, huh? And if I was going to do that, who would it be to be my co-host? I don't know. I'll have to think. So, folks, I got a lot of that going on. And also, you know, I've been working on a stage play for a little while, as you guys probably have heard, over the last, you know, year or so, a couple of years. I started writing it in 2020. Mainly because I've never written a stage play before, and I wanted a challenge, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, after writing it, it sounds great. It's a different kind of a premise. It does revolve, you know, like a kind of a busy kind of a train station. I've never seen a theater play about a train station before. And I know what you're probably thinking, well, how is that going to be entertaining? Well, let me tell you, this train station is not like something you've ever seen before. So I'll talk to you a little bit about that more later at some other point. And I also got some other projects coming up and whatnot. I do want to let you guys know that probably coming up within the next little bit, I'm going to be talking to you guys a little bit about the icons of VF4L as far as changing formats, casting, roster changes, as well as new arenas being built and what you can look forward to seeing in 2023, as well as I was asked to do a series on YouTube on teaching people about the history of pro wrestling. That ought to be interesting. I don't mind educating other people, so maybe perhaps I will do that as well. And also, I am planning on doing a series about the people currently on a roster. I'm going to be calling it Wrestler Spotlight, where I'm going to have, either a member or a team of each of our show. We're going to have them kind of watch along their own match. It's going to be a live thing on YouTube, actually. We're going to be talking on the spot, you know, doing the recording the album, the matches together, and then we'll be watching it afterwards. That should be a lot of fun and innovative to add to the show. So, everyone, I'm the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. It's taken me a long time to get to where I am, and you can too. And remember, no matter what your goal is at the end of the day, your dream, your aspirations, I did say, you know, we're going to talk about what happens when you get to where you need to be. And I do want to address those things, but because I want to make sure that is a subject that can be all by itself. So we're going to do that on a different time or a different day. Because I really want people to understand that it's great to have your goals and accomplish those goals, but they come with sacrifices. There's pros and cons. For example, just as kind of a tidbit, if you would, if your goal is to become a famous actor, all right, cool. You go to become a famous actor and you find instant stardom. What does that mean for you? How old are you? Well, when you're an actor, you may be a Hollywood actor now or a big actor now. So what happens now is, let's say you're a young actor. Your goal is to be a successful young actor to work in the new Harry Potter film. Let's cast you as Harry Potter. Well, what happens now? Well, now you're the most famous person on the planet. Every kid knows who you are. Every parent knows who you are because of their kids. And now also, when you go out to dinner, when you go out to play, when you go to school, that all changes everything prior. How people view you, how people talk to you, how people interact with you. Sometimes the punks out there will be even more punky than usual, or sometimes they'll be even nicer to you because of what you can do for them. You have to constantly question your validity of your relationships. Are they my friends, or are they just people who want to hang around with me because I'm well known? And even fandom. Okay, your goal is to become a famous actor. Well, the phrase before that is famous, and all honesty, that comes from your fandom. And if you let's take examples like Finn Wolfhard, for example, who is on the hit show Stranger Things, and people got really upset with Finn Wolfhard because he asked for some space as an actor because he had girls who were going and sneaking into his house, into his garage before he even got home. I want you to think of that. So when Finn Wolfhard said, I would like some privacy for, you know, when I'm on set or meeting fans, I'm cool. But I want you to think of, if you were 14 years old and you got to your empty home and found three random strange female fans in your garage screaming your name. If you don't think that's creepy, then I don't know. That's pretty up there. Because maybe that's something you think you want until you don't get a chance to get rid of it. Because that's what happens. That's the flip side, and that's the other side of accomplishing that goal, to become a famous actor, for example. Same thing goes for a musician. What happens when you're a big famous musician and you have, you know, you can't go anywhere without someone seeing you and knowing who you are? When you become a celebrity, you lose your right to privilege, your right to privacy, because basically you don't have any anymore. Right now, before you're an actor or before you're famous, you can walk down the street and not really take any mind on how you're really dressed right now. But when you are in the limelight, in the spotlight, you're a Hollywood actor or some type of celebrity status, well, now your picture of your outfit, no matter how good or bad, is going to be on the front page of every single magazine. Some people saying that you're a slob. Some people saying that you're in good shape. Some people saying this, that, the other thing. You based on how your clothes are. By the way, these are not things I'm just making up out of nowhere. These are actual examples of people who've gone through these exact things. Trust me when I tell you, once you become famous, your privacy is gone once it gets to that level. If this is something you want, cool. Just, you know, when it gets to be the point where they're staring in your windows, when they're sneaking into your home, whatever the, I'll tell you, it doesn't get creepier than that. And that happens to people all ages. So I don't think that that's just a young person thing. And if you think only the young fans are there, then you're also wrong, which makes it even more creepy and dangerous. So just something to think about. There's always pros and cons with our achieving our goals. And I'm not saying that to discredit you from becoming a Hollywood actor or to become famous in that sense. I want you to understand that there's pros and cons with each. One thing I always suggest to people when it comes to goals and dreams, if there's something you truly want to do, make a list. And well, what you do is you write this list here. Split it down the paper, pros and cons of whatever the goal is that you want to do. So whatever the goal is at the top, and then do a line down the middle of the paper. On one side, say the do's, which are what's good about it, the pros, all the things that will, you know, the good things that will come from it. And also, on the flip side of that, write down all the things you think that may be negative that goes along with that. And then after that, you kind of count. How many good things versus the negative things can I acquire for? And is it enough to worth going into? Or are there more cons that outweigh the pros? That's up to you to decide. But I do recommend that exercise no matter what goal it is that you want, because that ultimately will help you. And I use this model myself. So, everyone, I am the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, at the F4L Headquarters podcast saying, we'll be back later this week with more randomness and more epicness from the F4L Headquarters. I am the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. I love you all, and may all your dreams come true. Peace from the F4L Headquarters.